Today's Bible verse is from Proverbs chapter 17, verse 9. He who covers over an offence promotes love, but whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. May God add a blessing to the reading.
Good morning. Hello, online Fast family. If you are actually my family online today, hello. So, this might be a strange way to start a sermon, but I'm going to say I'm from New South Wales. So, it has been my horrifying experience to not see any blue, not see any cheering, not see anything going on. And then I reminded myself, oh, you're in Queensland. But the funny thing I saw was driving home one day through Calbar, some poor little Queenslanders got their flag upside down. And I thought, that's the funniest thing I've seen in weeks. Yes, stressed that he might lose. Queensland were given the beating of their life on Wednesday. And not a solitary word has been spoken of it. CSS? I don't care for them. This is the state of origin. Not. Yes. But I'll always back the girls' team, regardless of state. So as we said, we're starting a new season, and I thought, as I was writing this, I'm like, this is hilarious that we would start talking about grudges and unforgiving attitudes right in the middle of the greatest grudge this country has ever known. One state of people versus another state of people. Most of those have never played a game of football in their life, yet we won. I didn't even watch the game, yet we won. I just happened to walk through the lounge room at some godforsaken time in the day and saw it. I'm like, oh, we're winning. We're winning? We're winning? Hang on a minute. You know, it could have been a flashback to the 80s. I don't know. I wasn't watching. And it wasn't. And so the grudge grows. And there is power in the blue. Until next week, of course, because, you know, history repeats itself, doesn't it? We're going to talk about, in the next few weeks, forgiveness, holding grudges, betrayal, forgiving little things, and not, like, sometimes we're able to forgive humongous things that happen, and yet little things we hold on for the rest of our lives, because we feel justified, don't we? We're going to talk about reconciliation with God and how hard it is to forgive ourselves. That's got to be the person that we find the hardest to forgive in all of our life, ourselves. Maybe we hold ourselves to a greater standard than we do others, but it's hard. But today we'll ease into it. We're going to talk about looking at forgiving small offences that often accumulate over time. And they become big and they turn into bitterness and they hold us back and they stop us from doing what God really wants us to do. The things that God really wants us to have are stopped by the things that we hold on to. Do you already know that you're a grudge holder? Maybe you know somebody else who's a grudge holder. I can never really tell if I'm easily offended or not, based on how tired I am or not. If I'm extremely tired, as with everyone, as soon as you get overly tired, your defences drop. You have no capacity to think rationally or normally. And that plays a huge role in my responses to things. So I try not to ever get that tired. Sometimes we can be offended by tiny things, can't we? Just the tiniest thing will be huge in our eyes. Huge incidents, however, may have no bearing on us whatsoever. And we just, yeah, okay, that's fine. We roll on. Each of us have a different tipping point, don't we? What will annoy somebody else may not annoy us at all. What is offensive to somebody else isn't offensive to us. And we come to the difference in human natures. I will share one of my tipping points because it doesn't happen anymore. If I come into a room and I place my things where I want to sit and I go and do something and I come back and my stuff's been moved, even if it's only one space, my cranky switch gets flicked and I am highly offended. Not just put out, but offended to the point that I will make a federal case out of it because I am offended. The reason it doesn't happen anymore is because I sit there. And nobody wants to sit there, do they? No, you might catch officership if you sit there. Or be on camera. Yep, fair enough. Maybe for you, it's someone rolling their eyes at you. If you've had a teen person in your life and you've said something and they've gone, ugh. I know a woman who did not take kindly to that at all. Maybe it's the tone in their voice. You don't appreciate that. You're just trying to help. Maybe it's a lack of generally accepted manner. It's like, give someone something, they take it and they leave and you're standing there going, thank you would be nice. As I've said that. Maybe that is enough for you to take offence. Who gets offended if you let someone in the traffic line, which the rules are, you sit there until there's a gap. The ongoing traffic do not have to let you in. You let someone in and they just drive on. They don't give the official thank you wave into the rear vision mirror so that you can see them. Who gets offended by that? If you're online and you get offended by that, you can just type it in. If you're here, just keep smiling at me. That will do. People get really, really narked about not getting the thank you because you don't have to. You've been obliging and they've been offensive and rude. They don't say thank you. It really gets up people's goats. If you are a person who deals with social media, you will have noticed many times people think that social media is the perfect place to give offense and receive it. And I think it's ridiculous. I'm not great for social media. I have Facebook, but I don't participate in it. I don't have the other things that are about. I don't have Snapchat. I don't have Instagram. I'm an old lady, really, but I'm not interested either because when you live your whole life through that tiny little frame of social media, you are going to get offended at every single thing that comes up and you are going to take offense and you're going to give offense. But because you are behind the screen of your device or computer, you think you can, and it makes no difference. It makes a massive, massive difference to the lives of other people. If you are on a continuous search to be offended, if you like that feeling, you are always going to find it. You will always be successful if you are always looking to be offended. Living in a state of offense, though, it's got to be exhausting. And it's life-destroying, and it gets in the way of what God has planned for you. I've never heard anyone say, I am so glad I was offended today, I feel so much better. Nobody says that. Ever. But if you ever hear somebody say that, please tell me, because that will be a day. But how do you move past being offended? Because sometimes when you're offended, it cuts quite deeply. And it hurts quite a lot because you get offended because your sensitivities have been exposed and hurt. How do we live a life where everything that comes out of another person's mouth does not offend you? How do we grow past the daily temptation to be offended? You can choose to be offended. You can choose not to be, but it takes some practice. You don't just wake up one morning and say, I'm not going to be offended anymore. I'm over that. Something is bound to happen during your day. The answer is, you close the gap with love. Love is always the answer, isn't it? Because Jesus is love, therefore love is always the answer. However, when you want to close the gap with love, also takes a bit of work and practice. There's a dynamic that happens in every interaction. You may not have ever noticed it. It just, life is life, isn't it? You just get on. But it will happen every time you interact with another person. There is a gap between what they say and what you say, or what they do and what you do. Their action and your reaction. There's the gap. The gap is microseconds long because we react quickly. We have the choice in that tiny little microsecond gap to choose what we fill it with. You can choose to fill it with horrible nastiness, or you can choose to fill it with love. That is your choice. For example, you think you're innocently living out your life, going well. Someone gives you the middle finger. That is the rudest. It is the height of rudeness. You've done nothing that you know of. There is a micro moment for you to react or not react to the situation. Of course, we initially are offended, aren't we? We're offended, and you should be. But what do you do with that feeling? That's your feeling. They're already in a bad space. You don't need to make that worse. They're in a bad space. They've given you the finger. They probably didn't even recognize you. It wasn't for you. It's not about you. I'm going to suggest something. Practice the pause. I am a big fan of practice the pause. It's possibly the most useful skill I have ever learned in my life, and I encourage everyone to give it a go. Step one, you've been offended. Step two, pause. The world is not going to come to an end if you just take a moment. Even if you have to, and I do this, draw in a deep breath to remind yourself to pause. I literally do it. I go, everything has stopped. I hold it, let it out, gives your brain a chance to recalibrate almost. Pray for calm and sensitivity. You don't know what has happened on the other side of that fence, why that's just taken place. You have no idea. And remind yourself, everything is not always about me. Sometimes things are about the other person. And step five, forgive and let go and move on. Your life is the better for it. The person giving you the finger may be at the end of their tether, and we don't know what goes on for other human beings. We aren't expected to know either. We don't know how people are traveling unless they actually sit you down and say, this is exactly how I'm traveling and what's happened over the last 50 years of my life. We don't know. We can't know. As people of faith, however, we are expected to love. We are expected to pause. We are expected to reflect and not make everything about us, but to cast some grace and forgiveness in the direction of the one who has offended us. And oftentimes, without thinking, we could be the offender. We don't always know. But today we're talking about when people offend us. We cannot just claim that a person is a certain type of person because of one incident that has happened. More often than not, there is reasons behind behaviours. My reason for being offended so strongly if my stuff is moved stems from my feelings of not being worth being with. Hang on a minute, let me read that. That's terrible. Feelings of not being good enough to be with. I'm not good enough for someone to sit next to me. They've moved my stuff so they can sit next to the person they've chosen to sit next to, and they'll just put up with me there. So that's where that stems from for me. Always coming from a feeling of worthlessness to other human beings. That feeling of worthlessness to other human beings still sort of dances around in the back of my head. But as I get older, my worth in God means much more to me. So if I come one day and all of my stuff has been moved over next to Laurie, I'm fine with that. I sit next to Laurie. It's fine. We may find people rude, abrupt, abrasive, but I can guarantee you that there will be a deep-seated reason for that. And the rest of us taking offense and feeling justified in that offense does not make it better. It makes it worse. How would it be if Jesus, after being resurrected, said, right then, I'm not speaking to the human race again? I mean, he's got every reason in the world to be offended. All of our sin is cast on the one person. He takes that. He dies for that. And he's resurrected and he's like, you're all sweet. It's fine. It's a ridiculous notion that Jesus would say, I'm never speaking to the human race again. But that's how we respond. Well, if she's going to be like that, I just won't ever speak to her again. Well, why is she like that? Do we care enough to find out? Do we love enough to pause? Do we love enough to be patient and find out quietly if she's okay? What's happened? Can we help? Oftentimes we can't help, but maybe they just want to talk. Practice the pause and pray. Prayer is our number one defense. There is always a gap between their action and your reaction. Proverbs 17:9 says, whoever would foster love covers an offense. Love gives the benefit of the doubt. Love chooses to believe the best. Love believes the best for the other person. At home, perhaps at home, things might be not so loving some days. In a home setting, you might be asked the question, did you take the rubbish out? The question sounds innocent enough. However, if you aren't traveling well, or you're tired, or you've forgotten you feel stupid, then the gap can easily be filled with accusatory comments that Satan would love us to throw in there, such as, they think I'm lazy, or, if they wanted it done that badly, should have just done it themselves. Love responds in the gap with, they're probably just curious, in case it still needs to be done, then it can be done. You choose what you put in the gap. And why should we practice the pause and pray? The answer to that is simple, of course, because of your love, because of God's love, because Jesus forgave you, because there's grace for you, therefore there should be grace for others. People are not going to think Jesus is love if every time they're having a bad day, you snap their head off and you step in the gap with your big boots and you destroy them. Another person's behavior has a very, very low chance of being about you, especially if you haven't seen them for ages and then you do see them, but the time you've seen them, it wasn't a great space. That's not about you. Yet, we have a faith that says, even in that space, I will love you and pray. Their bad driving is not about you. Their bad mood is not about you. The edge in their voice is not about you. they may just be having a hard day. We each have our own battles, don't we? We battle our own things every day. Sometimes all that we need to do is battle the battle in our head. That's sometimes just enough. There are things we don't share with this world. There are things we may not even share with our partners. They come out in less than great ways. If you want others to treat you with grace and have the gap filled with love, then it's important to do the same for them. To take offense and harbor ill will, to hold the grudge. The offense has happened, and we're going to hold on to that. I have a right to be angry. I have a right to be offended by that because they've behaved poorly to me. I'm going to be cranky about it, and I'm going to take that to my grave. This attitude plays right into the hands of destruction on your own life. Somebody once said, and I always forget who it is, but for me it's Wes because he says it. Now I've forgotten the start of it. Holding a grudge is like taking poison and expecting the other person to die. Uncle Des, he's with Jesus now, and he'll be so happy because that man loved Jesus so much. Holding a grudge is like taking poison and expecting the other person to die. Your own soul is destroyed in the process. To push past that offense is to practice out our claim to faith and remind the person who is clearly struggling that we love them regardless of what they've done, what they do, what they're going through, and the offense they've just caused us. Can you imagine how embarrassed they would be once everything calms down and they reflect upon that? They're not going to say anything. The embarrassment is too high. But it will be there. As humans, we will struggle. And as other humans, we should be there for them. It honors God for us to rise above that. You can choose to get over it. You can choose to stick with it and hold on to it. After all, it is yours. It is your offense. I would encourage you, though, and say you have more important things to do for God than to be wandering around holding on to grudges. Your calling to love is way more important than your calling, which you don't have, sorry, is way more important than any offense you will ever receive. Any offense you have ever felt. We are called to rise above offense and give love. I'm not saying you're going to walk out of these doors and be all, oh, I'm all about that. But I am encouraging you to walk out these doors and start practicing the pause. Start noticing when you feel offended and decide what you will put in the gap. It will not hurt you to pause. And amazing things happen when you do. The last time I practiced the pause, somebody told me that they'd been given terrible medical news, and I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want to deal with that. I would have rather just walked out of this room and gone home and pretended I didn't just hear that. Because I don't want to think about that or deal with that or work through that. But I went, and just prayed, God would give me the words in the situation that I was very uncomfortable in. And all I ended up saying was, There isn't a lot I can physically do for you, but know that I care about this situation. Well, there were floods of tears after that, not from me because I was still in the praying, I'm praying and my person is crying. And it went according to how God would have seen it go, rather than what I wanted to do, which was, all right then, I'll see you later, and just leave. I am not called for my own comfort. No, neither are you. We are called to stand in the gap and bring love. As the team comes this morning, we're going to sing together What a Beautiful Name It Is. Because when we're bringing the love, it is in the name of Jesus. It is a beautiful name. It is a powerful name. It is a wonderful name. And I want you to take a moment to ask God, are you holding on to offenses? Are you holding grudges that are years old and should let go of them and move into a state of peace where you can step in the gap with others and bring that same love? Thanks, Neil.